Well, I hope you figured out that the F word that I want to talk about today from the title is not the same F word used by Bubbles and his pals in the Trailer Park Boys. I'm speaking about something much more serious, feminism. Feminism as the belief in the social, political, and economic equality of the sexes, and as the movement to advocate for those equal rights. Have you heard much about feminism lately? I mean, contemporary feminism, not anything historical. Seems to have disappeared. Sometimes it seems about as inappropriate as the swear word. How many have you used that word lately about yourself? Doesn't come up so much in my... Despite the fact that our Unitarian Statement of Principles declares that we affirm and promote the inherent worth of every person, and yes, those principles are in the order of service on the next to the last page if you want to look at them. I learned early that girls were second-class citizens, though. I was raised on a large farm with much machinery and multiple tractors. We kids got to help with anything we could do or could learn to do. Actually, it was you got to help whether you wanted to or not. By the age of 12, I was mowing not a small city yard like I have now, but an acre of yard with a power mower, not the kind that you sit on or the kind that walks by itself, but the kind you push. And I soon learned to operate the machinery to milk the cows. By the age of 17, I could, with my cousin, who was a mere 6 months older than I, start up the whole milking parlor system for the 90 cows we milked. But I never learned to drive a tractor. Not when I lived on the farm. I've ridden on them many, many times. As an adult, I've driven one a couple times, even steered one down the field while we pulled a harrow behind. Somehow, even though my younger brother and my three younger male cousins all learned to drive them at very tender ages, 12, there was never a call for me to do so. Field work was men's work. Women and girls could help in the barn. Driving tractor was the power job on the farm. Not that it should be romanticized too much. It would have been hot and dusty as well as noisy in those days before air-conditioned cabs. Just somehow I never got my pick of jobs on the farm. Nor did I get my pick of university majors. I'd hoped to enter veterinary college, but in 1972 only token numbers of young women were admitted. Other professional colleges were similar. I'm so impressed that here at Beacon we have many women like Peggy and Satya who were able to complete such professional training and enjoy a career despite those systemic barriers. In 2004, in the U.S., about 27% of the physicians are women now. And in Canada, more than 40% of the practicing veterinarians are women. In veterinary college, it's 80% women. Times have changed a lot. We've come a long way since the time when women were not even granted the right to vote. Women have gained the franchise piecemeal across the country. Our Unitarian foremother, Dr. Emily Stowe, yes, that same first female physician from Toronto, was one of the founders and the first president of the Dominion Women's Enfranchisement Association, incorporated in 1889. It took many tries, many votes, in many different ways, but women first gained the vote in BC in 1916 and then federally in 1918. The first woman elected in the 1921 federal election was Angus Campbell MacPhail. At least a few women were elected to the various parliaments and legislatures very quickly. It took a decision of the Judicial Committee of England's Privy Council in 1929, though, to grant women the right to be appointed to the Canadian Senate. That was when it was recognized that, yes, women were persons. And again, a woman was appointed. I hope you're wondering just how many women there are in the Canadian Parliament now. The world average for the percentage of women parliamentarians is 17%. in the Nordic countries of Europe, like Sweden, over 40% of their members of parliament are women. In the rest of Europe, it's just under 18%. Can you guess who's now at the top of the list for the number of women? Used to be Sweden. Now Sweden has 47.3%. It's Rwanda. They have 48.8% women. 39 of their 80 seats have women sitting there. I hope you're still wondering what the percentage is for Canada. Who knows? That's very close. But we're in 48th spot. We're tied with Monaco at 20.8%. We're just a little bit behind Pakistan and Ethiopia. We're well behind Argentina, Austria, the Netherlands, and Finland. We're ahead of Zimbabwe and the U.S. We're ahead of lots of other countries, actually. The Zimbabwe and the U.S. both have 16% of women in their legislatures. Our Senate is better off. We have 35% women. If I'd seen these numbers before, I hadn't paid any attention. I couldn't have told you what they were. I was surprised at how well some of these emerging nations are doing. I guess humbled is maybe a better word. Obviously, some of them have made conscious decisions to have equal representation and have worked it into their system of elections. And I'm even more impressed that we have among us at Beacon those who have served in legislatures. Thank you, Anita. But what difference does it make if there are more women in Parliament? The Speaker of the Senate of Jamaica says that women's active participation in legislation is vital to the articulation of women's issues. Women have to be there, she says, in Parliament to talk about the problems they encountered in areas as diverse as poverty, economic empowerment, health, violence, democracy, human rights. She says that there are several levels of changes. Women are instrumental in transforming the actual physical premises of Parliament to make them more gender-friendly and better adapted to the needs of working women with families. For instance, requesting facilities like daycare, toilets, gyms. They bring about changes in the institutional culture, using their influence to apply working methods and procedures to make parliaments better adapted to women members. For instance, meeting times. How many evening meetings do mothers want? Women also change the institutional discourse to attune it more to their values. This often entails changes in language and vocabulary that had originated in that traditional patriarchal thinking. Finally, she says, women influence the legislative agenda to ensure that issues of particular importance to women are given a place in the debate. And of course, women members of Parliament are role models to our young girls. They can also wield influence outside Parliament because their position gives them the opportunity to voice their opinions. I believe it is important that the body governing our nation be representative of its citizens. So somewhere close to that half of the elected and appointed members should be women. But so far, those who have the power haven't been much inclined to share it. I guess that shouldn't be a surprise. Some Canadian political parties indeed require that at the nomination stage there be at least one female candidate. But there is no quota or other mechanism to ensure better representation of women in Parliament. Indeed, quotas with enforcement is the way many of the post-conflict nations of Africa have been able to leap ahead of more established governments like Canada or Sweden. A Swedish professor of politics was asked, if everyone seems to agree that it's important to have women in politics, why is there resistance when we speak about quotas? Her response was, I identify four categories of resistance. One is the anti-feminist way of saying that politics is a man's business and that women should stay at home. This is not very interesting. Then there are the post-communist countries which say that they had quotas during the Soviet regime and they don't want them again. In fact, they didn't have quotas at the top, where the leaders were all men. There is also the liberal opposition, she says, saying that it is a question of merit and not a question of gender. Finally, you have the most interesting one, the most interesting category of resistance, the feminist opposition, which says that quotas may create a certain amount of stigmatization. The other question is whether there is a sufficient number of women ready to enter politics. In general, I would say that at the national level, there are no problems in getting a sufficient number of women, because in a parliament, there are 600 legislators at most. That means that 300 competent women are required, which is not difficult. Her words remind me of the former mayor of Ottawa, Charlotte Whitton, who famously or infamously said, whatever women do, they must do twice as well as men to be thought half as good. Luckily, this is not difficult. When the system is the problem, though, maybe we can change the system. International Women's Day was Thursday, March 8th. I couldn't find anything commemorating it in Maple Ridge or Pitt Meadows, and I did look several times. I made a couple phone calls. I do know there was a breakfast, at least, to celebrate women's accomplishments here in the Tri-Cities. Is that all we need, a breakfast? I wonder if it is, as Reverend Marjorie Leeming says, feminism is not an issue. It's a whole thing. By that I mean that it is not an issue in the way that the Equal Rights Amendment or abortion or energy or the environment is an issue. It is an overall category which includes the positive creative side. The feminist vision is not a fairy tale, but a reality-based possibility affecting every aspect of thinking, being, and doing. I hope she is right, that feminism is like the water for fish all around us, even though we're not aware of it. It has taken Sweden 80 or 90 years to get to where women are fully accepted as powerful equals. It's definitely something we here in Canada are still working on. The word feminism may not be on the tip of the tongue as often, but we still need it. Blessed be, and amen.